you are about to see the first public exhibition of an entirely new form of entertainment.
That belongs in a museum.
You are about to see the first public exhibition of an entirely new form of entertainment.
That belongs in a museum.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of Treasury Cast, the show that celebrates the greatest comics format of all time, the Treasury Edition, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and joining us this month to talk about Marvel Treasury Edition number 3, starring the mighty Thor, is our pal, Martin Gray. Hi, Martin.
Hello, Rob. Thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. You've been a friend of the network since the very beginning, and we have not had a chance to talk treasuries yet, at least on the show. So I'm really happy to have you here. Also, I think this is our first Thor treasury. There's a couple of Thors, but I don't think we've ever discussed one to this point. So I'm excited to talk about this book. It's a fine collection, and we'll talk about all of it in a moment. But Martin, since you're new to the show, I have to ask you, what, if any, history do you have with the treasury editions? Because I do know that the treasuries made it to your side of the world because we've seen those ads for them, you know, the British treasury ads. In fact, I'll include the one for this book in the gallery post. But I mean, do you have any history with these growing up?
A little, Rob. All I can say is those adverts pretty much lie. I mean, you would get them on the back of the Marvel UK reprint editions all the time. But finding them, it was like, they're like hen's teeth, honestly. I mean, I suppose they didn't come along with the regular comics because they were different proportions, so weren't used as ballast. I don't know how they got here. But occasionally they did. I mean, I never actually got hold of any of the Marvel ones at the time. I mean, this Thor comic I managed to get years later. But I got hold of the Superman versus Spider-Man, which was the most exciting thing I'd ever seen in my life. Wow. I also got the all-new collector's edition that accompanied Superman the movie, which was okay, but a little too texty and poorly reproduced photography for me. The only other ones I had at the time was the first Shazam Limited collector's edition, C23. I looked it up. And yes, I tried to make the diorama, and it was a complete failure.
Why was it a failure? Just like, did you kind of gnarl the paper with your scissors or what?
Yeah, I think it was, I mean, you're cutting them out, and they just, the paper was so thin. And I think I was, so, you know, I was probably using the plastic ended scissors anyway, which weren't very precise. It wasn't great. I mean, in recent years, I've had happier memories. I mean, I bought some of the hardback DC Treasury reprints, such as Superman v Wonder Woman and the World of Metropolis, and that first time out New Fun number 1, which is superb. And having listened to yourself and Michael T. Gilbert raving about it, I bought the top reprint volume.
Oh, yeah, that's a great book. Yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely. I'm glad we could help move a few copies. Okay, so that's, I mean, like I said, the ad, we talked about these on the Marvel Treasury ad show that I did with Sean Ross and Greg Ruggio, where we covered all the Marvel Treasury, not all, but most of the Marvel Treasury house ads, but we did talk a little bit about the British ads, and they're really nice. Like, they really, whoever was in charge of that designed their own ads. It wasn't like Marvel just copied them over, because of course, you know, the pricing would be different and things like that, but they really kind of went all out. And you know, they took like a little shot of Thor and like a little cutout of him, I think from like Journey into Mystery number 83. And then they had this cover, like, they were really tricked out. And so, you know, Marvel was trying to, at the very least, move some treasuries over on your side of the pond. So I love seeing all those British ads because they're really dynamic.
Well, they are. Well, I mean, I know that the covers and the posters for things like the Titans comic were done in the US by the likes of Young Jim Starlin and Duffy Voland and people like that. But I believe that the adverts would have been done in the UK by the UK reprint editor, who, a lot of the time when I was a kid, was, you know, well, you know, it was Neil Tennant from the Pet Shop Boys, don't you?
Yep.
Yeah. And I mean, there were other guys who did about that. Was probably Neil Tennant at that point. But yeah, the adverts were great. And again, they were just evil, because they'd make you want to find them. And I'd never find them. I mean, there was one advert where you could send away to Marvel UK for a copy of Origins of Marvel Comics and Son of Origins for a bargain price. Sent off my money. Never got the books.
Too bad. I love those books too. All right. Well, I can, so that's cool. Now you picked, like I said, we're talking about Marvel Treasure Edition number 3, The Mighty Thor. Were you a fan of Thor? Did you read a lot of Thor growing up? Cause I really did not.
I didn't read a lot of the early Thor because he was reprinted in Marvel UK's Spider-Man comics movie. And I wasn't the biggest Spider-Man fan. But as time went on, by the early 80s, I was buying the Marvel or colour comics that came across. And I started reading around the time of Roy Thomas's Return, which I love those with John Buscema. But I did read a few of the early reprints. And I just was appalled by how simpering Jane Foster was and how badly she was treated when Thor took her to become a goddess. And it just, so I've read a lot of the early comics nowadays. And when this one here, this Mighty Thor Treasury, I always wanted it. And when I saw that it was on eBay for a good price, a little more than 50p, I bought it and I just loved it. I mean, we'll get into the details, but this is why treasuries were invented.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Except I didn't read Thor much as a kid. He was always a little too, the character itself was always like to me a little too stiff. I mean, I know that's part of it is that he's that character. He's a god of thunder and they're talking with all the verily and all this stuff, but it just never really appealed to me all that much. And so I would buy it sparingly. I would buy it when I would, to reference another one of my shows, when I would go up to the Poconos, because it was like, well, I want more comics, I'll buy Thor. Now, of course, like most people my generation, once Walt Simonson took over, then I bought Thor every month for like 5 years. That was, you know, like to me, it's like, that's the run of Thor that I really loved. And once he left the book, I was like, all right, I'm kind of done with Thor. So I will admit, I always liked him in the Avengers and I love him in the movies. Like I like the current sort of iteration of him by Chris Hemsworth, but as a solo, and I liked when he would team up with people, but as a solo star, I was always kind of like, all right. And so I didn't have this treasury or the other Thor treasury when I was a kid. I got these later. I find it interesting that so early in the Marvel run of treasuries, he got his own treasury. I mean, this is Marvel Treasury number 3. Number 1 is, of course, Spider-Man. Number 2 is Fantastic Four. But 3 is Thor. And Thor, I guess, always sold really well. He always had his own book for throughout the 60s, 70s, 80s, into the 90s. So I guess he was on equal footing with all the other characters. But I always, when I look at that run, I'm like, geez, that's kind of amazing that, like, Hulk, the Avengers didn't come in sooner. Like Thor gets his, you know, he's the third treasury out of the gate. And so I think that's cool. Like, obviously he was pretty popular and, you know, obviously, everybody can see images from this book, on the gallery post on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. Before we get into the stories, and there's a lot here, let's talk about the cover. It features a marvelous, iconic as all get out drawing of Thor by the unfortunately now late John Romita Sr. What do you think of this cover image?
Oh, I absolutely love it. I mean, the John Romita figure, he's so noble, so stately. He's in the classic costume that you just can't beat. On the one hand, I wish Jack Kirby had drawn the cover because it's Jack Kirby artwork inside. But on the other hand, obviously John Romita was the face of Marvel in the 70s artwork. And I'm sure this would have sold a few copies. And the colouring, it just pops. And this logo, which I've never really seen anywhere else, I love it. I mean, I love the Hammer logo because it speaks to Thor's Viking side. But this seems to suit the science fiction-y mode that we have more inside this comic. The whole thing, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it really is. It's just beautiful. It's beautifully coloured. It looks just really, really nice. And so it's great. He said we've got Asgard and we've got the Rainbow Bridge and everything and a deluxe limited edition of the all powerful God of Thunder. Now, this book, unlike the first two Marvel treasuries, this is kind of the early version of a trade paperback because, the Spider-Man one and the Fantastic Four one reprinted different stories from kind of around the various eras of the characters. But this reprints a run of Thor stories right in a row. It reprints Journey into Mystery number 125, which is the last issue of that title before it got converted into Thor. And then it reprints Thor's 126 through 130 in one continued story. So this is Marvel testing out the Treasury Edition format by, again, essentially issuing a trade paperback. Because it's a collection of Thor stories that if you hadn't bought them at the time, which is the 60s, they're gone. They were gone. You know, I know that Thor, there was a Thor reprint title, that they, a dedicated reprint title for Thor, which you, I guess you could have gotten, like they had, you know, they had for Spider-Man, Marvel Tales, and Marvel Superheroes for Hulk. But I love that this is like, again, like an early trade paperback, and it gives you sort of a complete story. So I think that's a really cool idea.
It really is. It's a huge success in that, because it's just a really smooth, well-flowing story. I mean, they made a few tweaks, if we can get into here and there. But otherwise, I think it was edited, the whole treasury, by Roy Thomas. And I think it's, you know, some pinpoint, precise, clever editing that's gone on here, because you can't read it from beginning to end, as we've just done. And it's a super story.
Yep. It was, by the way, this book was on sale November 12th, 1974. All the stories that I'm going to synopsize very briefly here are by Stan Lee, of course, Jack Kirby, of course, and Vince Coletta.
Is it his name?
Oh Lord, how dare you, Martin. So first we're gonna do, because there's six books here and these Thor stories are pretty dense, I'm gonna synopsize them as briefly as possible, and then we're gonna talk about them one at a time, as opposed to just going all at once, because there's a lot here. So the first one, as I mentioned, is from Journey into Mystery number 125. The story is When Meets the Immortals. It's the synopsis is Thor fights a witch doctor named the Demon, whose strength has been enhanced by an artifact known as the Nornstone. When the demon sees he cannot defeat Thor on his own, he commands his army to use a powerful cannon on the Thunder God. Thor realizes that the weapon is more dangerous than the demon understands and tries to stop them from using it. He smashes it with Mjolnir, and the explosion knocks the demon and his army out. Thor then takes the Nornstone to Asgard. Meanwhile, on Earth, Hercules, having arrived on Earth, makes quite a splash, attracting a lot of attention on Earth, including some from Jane Foster. After Thor drops the stone off to Odin, he returns to Earth and is none too happy to find Jane and Hercules spending time together. Insults are exchanged, and they prepare to battle. All right, Martin, so what do you think of this this initial volley here of the treasury?
Well, I would say this was the odd one out in the issue, in that, look, obviously it was plotted Marvel style by Jack Kirby, and it ends the previous story with this witch doctor guy, then goes into the Hercules, and it really is a game of two halves. And as far as the actual story goes, it's good fun. I mean, you know, Thor's whacking the witch doctor, Hercules shows up. But I wish, actually, at the very start, in terms of the reprint, I wish that this intro by Roy Thomas hadn't told us that we were going to be missing subplots little here and there, little bits, because it's only one story where you get a couple of pages pulled out. Nothing really in this one. I wish I hadn't known, because I was reading the whole thing looking for missing bits. But no, I mean, I thought it was interesting that you had a villain here called the Demon, which obviously Jack Kirby used that name later. I don't know whether he came up with it or whether Stan did. But what was odd about this one, you might have an idea from an artist's point of view, because I read this and I hadn't realised at the time, as I did some research, that Hercules had appeared the previous year in the Journey into Mystery annual. But when you see Hercules for the first few pages in this, he's hiding his face, he's behind some rays or whatever, you can't really get a good look at him until the next issue. So I thought they were doing a bit of a mystery reveal on Hercules, but readers had already seen him the previous year, probably. I mean, I don't know what that was about.
Yeah, me neither. I don't give it. Yeah, and we already knew who he was. So yeah, I don't understand the why. Again, it's not like it's some sort of mystery. So yeah, that's kind of, it was a weird approach to take.
Yeah, it was, but I did like the fact that he does look so much like Steve Reeves from those Hercules movies. I mean, I've got a poster on the wall here, and again, sort of, you know, fishing around the net. I didn't realize that John Buscema had actually drawn adaptations of those in the 1950s.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
No, so the little Thor connection there.
That's really cool. I like that. I love the sequence where Hercules is playing a guitar for a bunch of women, and these goons come up with guns, and he hits the one guy with a guitar, and he's like, "Scurvy knaves, be gone." And Jack Kirby draws it like the guy's getting hit with the guitar, like it's a nuclear blast. Like it fills the panel, and it looks like the guy has been reduced to mush if you go by just the panel coming from the smashed guitar.
It is fantastic. I mean, it could be the prototype for the famous Sal Buscema sort of groin punch, whatever they call it, because it really is amazing. But again, I mean, going back to what you were saying before about Thor always coming across as a stiff character, Hercules here, and he's such a breath of fresh air. I mean,
yeah,
as you said, he's introduced straight away, carousing,
He's having a laugh with everybody. He's just enjoying himself. While poor Thorpe, you know, he's a real wet blanket in this story. He's having a terrible time angsting over Jane Foster.
That's the other thing. It's like, I never really cottoned to Jane Foster. I always thought she was just kind of a drip. I mean, I know that all the love interests tend to be that way because they were always, oh, you know, that's just the way they're written always by male writers. But just Jane Foster, I always thought, I was just like, Thor, go with Sif. Like, Sif is so much more interesting than Jane Foster. And I thought that in the movies, too. I was like, Jamie Alexander as Sif was so cool. Like, Thor, what are you doing? Like, I don't, you know? And I agree. Hercules is so fun, both in comic, you know, just like his big, bold personality. And yeah, he does look like Steve Reeves. So yeah, it's like Thor is just kind of like, all right. But Hercules, he's you know, really fun to read.
He is. But I mean, I love Sif. But Jane, again, Jane was set up to fail when she went to Asgard. She had no chance. She was thrown into it. It's about 10 issues later, so it's beyond this volume anyway. But I really didn't like the fact that Jane is then, you know, Jane fails in Asgard. She's sent to Earth with a memory loss, given a new boyfriend, Keith Kincaid, who she later marries immediately. And about a page later, Thor meets Sif, who he hasn't seen since she was a kid, so that's probably why he was into simpering Jane. He'd forgotten about Sif or something. But it's like the same story in which Jane is dismissed. He meets Sif and straight away he's all over her. And nah, not good behavior.
Yeah. And then, okay, so one other thing I would mention as we're going to proceed here with the artwork, right? This is Jack Kirby in his prime. You know, these stories are particularly full of action, full of things being smashed, walls being knocked down, lightning bolts, you know, crazy machinery. So this is Jack Kirby, you know, the sort of platonic ideal of Jack Kirby.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, I just cannot stand Vince Coletta inking Jack Kirby. I just can't. I just feel like he just deadens the work. And the fact that he's on every single issue, again, I'm going to complain about it now and get it out of the way. I'm not going to keep talking about it. And we know we pick on Vince Coletta and you know, I picked on him over on For All Mankind because he's inking Super Friends over there. When he did a good job, I think I was complimentary, but I look at these these pages and but they look great at the larger size. Jack Kirby's perfect for that. I love the layouts. I love the action. I love the pacing. It's just, I really wish literally anybody else, Joe Sinnott, Mike Royer, anybody had inked Kirby instead of Vince Coletta, because I just think it just deadens the artwork. And the only reason to me it works as well as it does is because Kirby is Kirby. But anyway, that's my piece. I'm done picking on Vince.
I think I'm a little more fond of Coletta on Kirby than you were, because I came across him slightly later in the run when, to my mind, to my eye, and I'm not an artist like yourself, but to my eye, he's working better with Kirby. So it's a lot inkier, a lot nicer to my point of view. But here, even here, there's some bits that I really like, such as there's a splash page in the second chapter that we're coming to where Thor and Hercules are just beating the heck out of one
another. Oh, it's amazing. It's an amazing splash page.
I think Coletta does a good job there, and at various other points in the book. Whereas at other points, you've got like panels that will come to a lot later, in which there's one bad guy who's banished by Odin, and he's in his nappy basically. And I don't know whether Coletta's going for a delicacy, but it's just really there's not much impact there at all. But I pretty much fond of the artwork all the way through on this. Maybe it is because it's just so big, so bombastic, and just goes straight to my childhood.
Yeah, like I said, it's super fun to read, and like I said, it's Kirby at his peak, I would say, late 60s. But yeah, okay, like I said, I've done my piece, and I can complain about Vince Coletta anywhere. So yeah, okay, the splash page again, you can see it in the gallery, but for the next story is called Whom the Gods Would Destroy. It's from Thor number 126, which is the first issue of Thor. The book officially became Thor as of this issue. So I really realized, you know, Journey into Mystery, why are we burying the lead here? Let's just call it Thor. So this story is about Thor and Hercules engage in a massive brawl, not listening to Jane's pleas for them to stop. Hercules actually defeats Thor, if temporarily, and spectators swarm the Prince of Power, ignoring the Thunder God. After Herc departs, Thor feels humiliated and tells Jane he's going to go back to Asgard until he feels as though he can restore honor in Jane's eyes. But after Odin telepathically communicates to Jane, she follows the Thunder God to Asgard. So, yeah, obviously, this is going to be the briefest synopsis of all, because mostly it's just a big fight. It's just Thor and Hercules beating the living crap out of each other. There's a marvelous sequence where they pick up a truck and Thor dumps it on Hercules and just reduces it to rubble. I mean, they do, I can't imagine how much of like the city that's been destroyed. There's one page, just a full page of just Thor punching Hercules. They pick up a, Hercules picks up a building and dumps it on Thor at one point. It's so much fun.
It really is. I mean, to my mind, this is the most classic Marvel comic in the whole issue. With it's, you know, it's got the fight scenes, you say, it's got a bit of soapy angst. And I mean, from that first splash page, I mean, you were talking about platonic ideals. I mean, to me, this is the platonic ideal of a Marvel splash page, because, you know, you've got the bombastic title in the spiky lettering box, a huge amount of copy, entertaining.
Oh my God, there's so much copy.
Yeah, I love it. An amazing image. And this bit of smack talking by Hercules is, you know, because Thor's going, not even Hercules, son of Zeus, may strike Thor with impunity. And Hercules replies, your overbearing conceit is a standing joke in Olympus, thunder god, but now I'll rid you of it forever. How could any kid not just rush to page two after reading that?
Yeah, they were, Marvel was just, you know, they were burning, shooting on all cylinders at that point. It's so fun. It's just a giant fight. I would love to see this in a movie. I know that they're at the end of the last Thor movie, they revealed that Hercules is in this universe. But man, this is just such a fun book. And of course, again, seeing it at the larger size is great. And one other detail that I love about the treasuries, and this is something I didn't think about when I was a kid, but yeah, now that I notice it, is the last page, right? The last page of this story where Thor wants to go back to Asgard and wants to leave, and Jane gets that telepathic command from Odin, and she's like, you know, follow my son. And she's like, I will. And then the last panel is this monochromatic image of Jane trailing after Thor, and he's kind of ignoring her, right? And I would imagine in the original comic, I've not seen the original comic, but I'm imagining in the original book, there's copy, right? There's probably like next,
there's copy in them all at the bottom there. Yeah.
Right. But because it's a treasury and the story is continuing on the next page, they take all that stuff out and it just leaves it with this nice little quiet panel after, you know, 20 pages of smash and, you know, gabam and all, you know, the action. It ends on this nice little quiet panel because they didn't feel the need to have to plug the next story. So I liked that they did that. That's actually more work for the Marvel bullpen to take all that stuff out than it would have been just to leave it in. So I love that, you know, they kind of end the story on a kind of quiet note because they don't need all the blurbs because you're moving right on to the next page.
It's really, really effective. I mean, I think Stan Lee as well, with his dialogue and narration, he's done a great story. I mean, obviously he's never short of words, but some of the words are just great. I love the fact that throughout we have this, you know, this big battle. Hercules is learning to respect Thor, and you know, so you know they're becoming friends. And the smack talk again, it's at a very high literary level. I mean, Stan didn't just phone this in, really. Impressive stuff. I mean, even what I also like about these early Marvels is that you get all these people on this, the man on the street, you know, just, you know, commentating on the battle, being an Asgardian chorus perhaps. And you know, like, so for example, when Hercules has beaten Thor, you've got this photographer thrilled at the idea of Thor is dead. I mean, what a stinker.
I like that Stanley didn't shy away from that. You know, that some people in some of the man on the street people in the Marvel Universe are dicks. You know, look, that never happened in DC books. You know, nobody would ever be like, yay, Superman's defeated. Like, here, you get some guys are like, oh, yeah, oh, this is kind of interesting. Yeah,
they're just happy to see you fight. One of them's gone down. Brilliant stuff. It's just, I mean, you just turn any page in this story and it's fantastic. But I think one of my favorites is the one where Hercules lifts the building off the page on page 29 in the Treasury. Just the sound effects, the way Jack Kirby can just sell you on the fact that, you know, okay, these people have immortal power, but you can see the sinews moving, the straining, the really, it's just amazing.
Yeah, it's great. It really is. It's super, super fun. I mean, like I said, I didn't read Thor as a kid, and maybe if I had read stuff like this when I was younger, although this is obviously pre my time, but I mean, if Thor had been this much fun when I was buying it, you know, if I bought it off the stands, I would have kept buying it. I'm like, this is really fun. I mean, it's this is the energy that I liked about the Walt Simonson run, is that kind of just per bombast and humor and things like that. So yeah, it's the second chapter is really terrific. So, okay. Chapter 3, The Hammer and the Holocaust. Hercules has been asked to star in a movie about himself. An offer the Prince of Power cannot say no to. Little does he realize the owner of the movie studio is actually Pluto, ruler of Hades, because of course it is. And this whole thing is a trap for Hercules. The plot includes Hippolyta playing an actress and a contract that creates an eternal pact for those who sign it. Meanwhile, in Asgard, Thor helps his father Odin fight off Sedring, a member of Odin's council who attempts a coup. Thor fights to the point of exhaustion, but he is successful. After Sedring gives up, Odin carries Thor off, calling him the most noble of the Asgardians. All right, Martin, what do you think of chapter 3?
It's getting a bit wacky, Rob, isn't it, really? what is it with Marvel villains buying film studios as well? You had the Submariner and the early Fantastic Four. Now, Pluto's is probably someone did it in the Hulk at some point. I don't know. But I love it. I mean, I would say that on the splash page here, it's again, it maybe to you it looks fine, but there's an upshot of Thor from the ground looking downcast, and to me that's the one image in the book that doesn't quite work.
Why so? Why do you think it doesn't work?
It's just the way, you know, you see about, you know, 2/3 of Thor's head, and it just looks awkward, the positioning. I mean, and the position of Thor doesn't match the angle on Jane.
It's very tough, even for Jack Kirby. It's tough to draw people from that angle. It's really hard.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not getting a Jack because I'm a big fan. I mean, I was the classic comics fan who didn't get Jack until he was, you know, above the age of 12. But I just adore the work now. But no, I mean, overall, it's a brilliant chapter. It was interesting to see Thor face his existential crisis. Odin's harvest power. Is he still worthy? Well, if you think about it, Thor, you are still worthy because you're carrying your hammer.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Ooh, yeah, you're the one carrying Millionaire, buddy. So, yeah, stop. And you really are kind of like, Thor, just stop being such a drip, man. Like, just go with it.
Well, he's in the aura of Jane Foster, so he's going to be simpering himself. I did find it funny that Odin is employing a guy named Sedring the Merciless, and then he's surprised when Sedring betrays him by stealing the Odin power.
You do know his name, right? It's called the Merciless, right? You understand what's going on here? I love the idea of, again, you mentioned that, like, the movie studio bit. But Stan loved that. Stan, we all know that by this point, movies had been, the movie industry had been maybe not really taking it super seriously, that any stuff could have been done with Marvel. But Hollywood had been sniffing around Marvel Comics a little bit. And you got to wonder if Stan was kind of, you know, interpolating that into, like, these are the, because, like, everybody from the world of movies is sleazy or a trickster or whatever. Like, they're not to be trusted. And so I feel like that's a little bit of Stan's internal life bleeding into the page here. So
that makes sense. Yeah,
it does. It makes total
sense. As I see, I had a pop, as we say in England, at that one panel by Jack that I didn't like. I've got to praise my favourite panel in this whole chapter on page 47, which has Thor. He's been rained on. He's been in this globe of punishment or something, and he's just picking himself off the ground. And the angle, the posture, you can really see that he's moving up with the water dripping off his head into a pool.
Mm-hmm.
It's stunning.
It's good stuff. It really is. It's really exciting. You are. Kids and at the time got their 12 cents worth, and we are getting our $1.50 worth, you know, in the story. I mean, there's just so much going on here.
One tiny last thing that I did like in this story is that Thor blinds Sedring the Merciless with a bolt of lightning, because it's just in the same way that nowadays all you ever see Superman do really is fly and use the occasional vision power and punch things. Here you actually see Thor do something other than fly through the air and bash people with his hammer. I just wish we had more of that nowadays.
Yeah, it's cool stuff. It really is cool stuff. So, all right. So chapter 4, The Power of Pluto. As Thor recovers from the battle with Sidring, Hercules continues to work on the movie. He signs the Olympian Pact, thinking it's a standard movie contract. He is thinking, you got to read your fine print, Hercules. He is then told by Pluto that he has to fight hordes of demons. Thor, still recovering from the fight, wants to go back to Earth for a rematch with Hercules. But when he arrives, he sees that Hercules is fighting against overwhelming odds and joins in. They are successful, and Hercules tells Thor what has happened. So again, I love this detail. I love that when, oh, by the way, there is a bonus feature to in the middle of this story. We'll talk about it in a second, but I love that, you know, Herc and Thor are kind of at odds during this whole thing. But then when he shows up and he sees Hercules fighting these demons, he's like, oh no, no, now we're compatriots. You're like, yeah, that's what I want to say. It's fun watching them fight, but I like that it's like, oh, the honor kicks in of being an Asgardian. So again, another really fun chapter.
It absolutely is. It's nice that they're going in different directions, not just having things fighty, fighty, fighty. And there we have it in this chapter at the film studio. Someone does make a Steve Reeves gag about Hercules.
Mm-hmm.
Which is rather funny. And there's a scene where Thor's recovering, and we see Thor, the god of thunder, and Balder, the Gruffalore, as far as I can see, going fishing. And they're fishing for this huge Asgardian mega beast, and the beast attacks them. And I think you might agree with me in that I would say, serves them right that the beast serves them right for hunting an innocent creature.
You know, yeah, I don't expect the Asgardians to be vegetarians, I guess, but yeah, like, okay, well, you know, the Asgardian fish are probably just as fearsome as the Asgardian. So, okay, yeah, it serves you right, guys.
Yeah, well, it was just wild to see something in Asgard that's other than sort of people quaffing mead in halls and bashing each other and standing in awe of Odin. I mean, it was just to go out in this amazing contraption vehicle. And it's stunning, even though this is the chapter with the word, I mean, I probably can't even say it's inking by Vince Clayton in this chapter because it's so poor. But even there, it still looks amazing.
It's, as I said, the layouts again and the penciling, everything is fantastic. And speaking of mead, there is a bonus feature here. It's page 54 and 55 of the Treasury, right in the center. And it is a 2-page pinup of the Thor cast by John Buscema. I don't know. I guess it doesn't mention an inker, so maybe he inked it himself. But anyway, it's Thor raising his hammer, and you've got Sif and Jane Foster and Balder and Heimdall and Volstagg, Odin. You even have Loki in the background there. Like, he's got to be, you know, he's there for the family photo, even though he's kind of in the back and he's looking kind of miserable. But it's a great... You know, it's a great, you can tell this is the kind of stuff Buscema really loved, this kind of old timey stuff. And it's a great 2-page pinup of the Thor cast. You know, it's a marvelous little bonus to throw in.
It's absolutely amazing. I mean, it's such a shame that it's not something that you actually could get out of the treasury easily. And if you did, that's your story gone. But just keep it in the middle of this story and just staring at it. I mean, how amazing that they have Carnilla in there. I love Carnilla so much.
Yeah, it's really nice. But yeah, you mentioned that you could not pull this out of your book because unlike the DC treasuries, which were stapled, the Marvel treasuries were square bound. So these are glued in. And so, yes, you could have pulled this out, but then you would have to cut it, maybe stitch it together as opposed to DC where you could have just lifted it out in the center spread. So overall, like for if you want to pull your books apart, the stapling is more your friend. But in terms of these books lasting longer and retaining kind of their shape, you want to go with the square bound. So, you know, you lose a little bit by that.
I think if this had been DC, Bob Vazarkis would have come up with a way of making it a fold-out poster or something.
Actually,
to all the production people, Rob, can I just take a second to shout out the unnamed colors? Because, I mean, something as simple as page 67, where you've got Pluto's head up in the top right corner. And it's just a yellow head. Mm-hmm. Fantastic Jack Kirby illustration, blue background, but it just really pops. There's something uncanny about it.
Yeah, I like the monochromatic take on that. I think it's nice that they did that. Yeah, I don't know whether these are recolored or not. Yeah, I mean, they said that there's no credits for the original book, and then there's certainly none in the The treasuries, yeah. I don't know if these are following the same colors or whatever, but yeah, it looks quite nice.
When I was checking out what was missing, Rob, I was went to the Marvel online, the Marvel Unlimited, and the coloring seemed to be exactly the same. Generally, Hercules's pants, well, his skirt is a different color, but generally it seems to be the same. But and also it turns out, I found out this morning, I've actually got this in a trade paperback collection, a soft version of the Marvel Masterworks, which I haven't realised because I bought it years ago. And again, the colouring seems pretty much the same, just a lot glossier.
Okay, okay. Yeah, no, they look. It looks really nice. Again, it's just bold, you know, and everything is just, like, everything's just big. The sound effects, you know, Hercules drops this giant piece of machinery on the bad guys. Baroom! You know, again, it's just, and it moves at lightning pace. I know that they've taken some stuff out, but man, the thing is just flying by so fast.
You know, just basically they've taken out two pages, the odd editorial note. Actually, one last thing on this chapter, though. In the panel after Pluto's head, page 67, would you say that's Kirby doing a Ditko homage?
That's interesting. Yeah, that is kind of like Ditko staging the hands and like the sort of Doctor Strange-esque stuff going in. Yeah, I could see that. You know, he influenced him a little bit. Yeah, that looks a little bit like a Doctor Strange kind of panel. I never really thought about it, but yeah, that's absolutely. I love how it ends with Thor walking away and Hercules thinking, "The Thunder God departs. Shall I ever know his like again?" Yeah, you probably will, Hercules.
It seems to me that Stan Lee was and Jack Kirby, they were really falling in love with their character. Hercules is this storyline progressed because he's got so many lovely showcase moments. He's really, his personality is spotlight, and he's presented as totally equal to Thor in terms of strength, nobility, general godsmanship. And it's no wonder shortly afterwards he was up for the Avengers.
I loved him in the Avengers. Oh my God. So we got chapter 5, The Verdict of Zeus. Thor goes to visit Jane Foster. Meanwhile, in Olympus, Pluto hands Zeus the Olympian patch, which forcibly installs Hercules as the ruler of Hades, freeing him from the throne. Hercules arrives and is told by Zeus that he must honor the contract, but he can't get out of it if he can find someone to fight for him. While visiting Jane, Thor meets her mysterious new roommate, Tana. Thor tells Jane he wants to marry her, but to do so, he would have to give up his godly heritage. The couple doesn't know that Tana is listening in. Hercules cannot find anyone to fight for him and is about to be dragged down into Hades. Odin then calls Thor back to Asgard, who offers to fight for Hercules. Okay. Look, I love that. First of all, I love that this contract, you know, is like, well, that, like the idea of like, you have to rule Hades because you signed this contract. Like, okay. There's a sequence where Thor gets in a cab. And he has a long interaction with a cabbie who I feel like is Jack Kirby drawing himself as a cabbie. I got that vibe from that a little bit. I love, you know, the view of Hades, the monsters that they have to face. There's this great sequence where Hercules is fighting this one creature, which is absolutely fantastic. There's another bonus feature again, we'll talk about here in a second in the middle of this story, which it's weirdly placed. It's on pages 78 and 79. I'm going to assume that was not in the original comics. It seems like an odd place to have it.
No, in the original comics, I mean, obviously we have like two pages with Jane Foster and Tana Nile in the apartment, the introduction of Tana Nile, who became a fairly big villain in Thor. And I can't imagine, I mean, when I was editing UK DC reprints, you'd sit down at the beginning of the month and you'd have your flash plan. And you'd work out carefully where things were. Obviously, there's no adverse to take into consideration here. But if you had a special feature like that, it goes at the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of a single reason why suddenly you have a two-page spread of, it's hilarious, actually, an Asgardian shopping mall. why it's there? I mean, even though they said at the start of the Treasury, you know, we might pull out the odd subplot, it's quite an interesting one that might... Why the Tana Nile business? She's such an eerie, fun character, this fun design, and it just frustrates me the fact that you know there's two pages gone from a story which aren't directly relevant to the actual Treasury theme, but it's gone for no good reason. I mean, it's great to have a bonus feature, but it's plumped so stupid. Anyway, I'm wittering on. What have you got for the bonus feature, Rob?
Oh, I love it. It is weirdly placed. It is just like, why wouldn't you just put it at the last? I mean, you can't put it on the last page because it's a two pager, but like, it just seems weird. It does seem very like, I would think you would put it maybe with like, not put it alongside the pinup, like just have four pages of the bonus features all together or something, but okay. But I do love it. This is basically a map of, you know, Asgard, a typical Asgard street. So you've got the Temple of Titans, Warlock's Haven, a giant bust of Odin, Warrior's Walk, a monument to the Unwary, the Dome of Combat, the Hall of Heroes, the Museum of Weaponry, Vagaspiral, the Tree of Life monument. And then there's a little arrow leading off page two, shopping center.
You cannot tell me they're not taking the Michael there. I mean, all these amazing wonders then. And over that way, there's the shopping center.
There's a video store. And a one potato two and a karate school. Like, what? Like, is there capitalism in Asgard? Are there stores that you buy stuff? Like, who runs the stores in Asgard? Are they gods as well? Is there a god of shopping? I mean, what is that about?
Found to be. I love that there's also this compass type thing. North, east, west, and south is to earth. That's the direction.
Sure. Okay. I buy that. That makes total sense.
Back in the actual story, I absolutely love the page of Olympian dancing. It's such fun. I want to do the Olympian frug.
It is very joyous. It is, again, wonderfully colored. Like, everything is just bright, cold, bright, bold colors. You know, there's no grays. There's no kind of midtones. It's all just purple, red, green, blue. Yeah, everything is, you know, like, I'm much like the rainbow bridge. It's rainbow colored. It's just really fun.
It just wants to be there. And then when it's interrupted in the next panel by Hercules with his hat of trees, I think it was taken more to appreciate his hat of trees. It's the drama created by the fact is, you know, well, monochromatic colouring with a little yellow lady in the background. Fantastic. I don't know whether it was maybe someone like production John Verputin or Marie Seven or someone colouring and someone really skilled, but they so knew how to sell the drama.
They did. They absolutely did. Thor would have made a great Colorforms set, because Colorforms to be those, you know, the pieces had to be kind of one color. But if you put them all together, like, that would have, I mean, there were Marvel Colorforms, but they weren't dedicated to one character. That probably, maybe there was like a Spider-Man set, probably he was that popular, but like, Thor would have been really cool because the colors would have matched kind of what you see here.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, we never had, as far as I know, Colorforms in the UK, but we had these things called, from Letra said, called action transfers, which you probably had in some
form. Oh, yeah, we had them too. Yep.
Yeah, rub down transfers. And Thor would have been fantastic, you know, in the halls of Asgard with a few villains and lots of mead quaffing folk. Oh, I would adore that. Bring it out now.
Yeah. Oh, and the Thor Mego doll is great. Like, the colors are great, and he comes with Mjolnir and he has the helmet. So, like, that's like one of their nicest dolls, because it looks just like what he does in the comic. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, he really translates well to kind of merchandise.
But the one disadvantage you have of not seeing me on camera here is that I've brought him to my bookshelf. I put the little Thor plushie on the bookshelf, and he's so cool.
Fantastic. So, by the way, you mentioned, like, in the final page of the fifth story, there's another shot of Pluto, like, in a monochromatic thing. Like, when he gets really dramatic, he's doing his speeches, they make him one color, just this kind of red background. Again, it's very, very dramatic. I love that he's got no pupils in his eyes. Like, he's really cool looking.
Oh, spooky. He's not too far from Darkseid either at this point.
Yeah, a little bit. So now we're on to the last chapter, chapter six, which is called Thunder in the Netherworld. While Thor fights Pluto's army back on Earth, Jane's roommate Tana reveals herself to be an alien who was part of an upcoming alien invasion, because of course she is. She hypnotizes Jane into leaving New York City. Thor continues to fight Pluto's army, including the creature known as Cerberus and the super strong Crusher. Thor, though, will not give up. The destruction wrought makes Pluto call off the pact, lest his whole empire be destroyed. Thor and Hercules leave Hades. And so that's the end of the story and the end of the treasury. And you mentioned this actually just last month in the feedback to the Spidey treasury, which we'll get to later on in the show, where you're like, there should not be continued stories. in treasuries because you're trying to, you know, deliver something complete. And I mostly agree with you on that front. So this is actually, they really paced this out quite well because this does bring this run of stories to a nice conclusion. Obviously, their subplots are going to go on, the thing with Tana and whatever. But in terms of like wrapping up the kind of Thor Hercules battle and the whole Hades thing, this does come to a nice conclusion and it makes for a good way to wrap up the treasure.
Absolutely, Robert. I mean, if I'd got this as a kid, I mean, I was going by your days, I was 10 year old when this came out, I would have just been thrilled a bit because it's such a meaty, fun read. And yeah, I'm mourning from my editor's point of view about the fact that you got a couple of pages missing. But as a reading experience, it's just top notch.
Yeah, it really is. Again, it's kind of a, you know, a beginning, middle and end for the treasury. Again, you've got, you know, it ends with Thor and Hercules walking off. It's really, really terrific. And then on the inside back cover, we've got a cover gallery of the six covers. And again, they're unfortunately in black and white and they're very small. So it's a little hard to kind of really enjoy them. They are beautiful. All of them, of course, again, it's classic Kirby, but my favorite one, I always want to mention this, is the final one, the cover to Thor number 130, Thunder in the Netherworld. That is one of my favorite Marvel covers, Jack Kirby covers of all time, because you've got this kind of big white band going across the cover, sort of, you know, talking about how Thor is above ground and then he's also fighting this battle in the Netherworld. And so you've got this bifurcated cover of Asgard up top where everything is clean and nice, and then at the bottom these hordes of demons like grabbing Thor and dragging him to the Netherworld. It's a wonderfully designed cover by Jack Kirby, and I love it. You generally, it's almost like it's two panels, but it's not. It's all just one image. And I really love it. And I'm glad they included it here, even if it is kind of small.
Absolutely. I mean, I hope you were able to put that one in color on the gallery, because that was just an outstanding one for myself as well. Because it's just so different. The fact that it's telling a story and he's really pacing the way that the reader's receiving this information. You know, you're following it from top to bottom. And it's like, he's going from the quiet to the darkness, and what's going to happen inside? My goodness me! I mean, all the covers are total classics, but this one is so different. I mean, I can't think of any Marvel cover from the period that's anything like that.
Yeah, it's unique. It's a very, very unique design. It's just terrific, absolutely terrific. And so, we've got a back cover, another brand new image again from John Romita. And it's whoever holds this hammer, be worthy, shall possess the power of Thor. So you've got Don Blake, who we have not seen in this entire treasury. He's nope. Never Don Blake. It's Thor the whole time, striking the thing down and turning into Thor. And it says, from Thunder God's premier appearance, Journey into Mystery magazine, August 1962. This is such a good sampler. It's not a sampler in that it doesn't trip hammer through Hortor's history, but like, honestly, I enjoyed reading this so much that I think if I had been a kid and I had bought this treasury, I might have been like, I think I want to read the Thor comic, because this is a really, really great set of stories for Thor. It's really fun. It's got all the Stan Lee melodrama. But man, I really wish I had bought this one as a kid.
It sounds like job done. Yeah, I mean, the contents page, which we didn't get to, which is, as far as I can see, an original illustration and is credited to Marie Severin and Frank Giacoya. That's just, you know, it's got the contents of the issue, but around it is this box of artwork of characters that you don't see in the comic itself. The Warriors Three, apart from Balder, Hel, Connor from the poster, Zeus and Pluto and Loki. But it's the whole package is so great. I mean, it's only spoiled by the fact that on the cover it says 100 page collector's special and there are two exclamation marks. That's unforgivable.
it's a really, really nice collection. I think if you're trying to sell Thor, again, I never fully grokked whether the treasuries were meant to just capture the audience that was already buying the book, or maybe ideally both is, you know, hey, if you already read Thor, here are some stories maybe you haven't read because they've come and gone. But hey, if you haven't read Thor, maybe you'll like this. And like I said, I I, you know, maybe I never even saw this as a kid. It's not like I can remember. I probably wouldn't have bought it because, again, I was not a big Thor fan, at least as a solo star. But reading it, this was so fun to read. I pulled this out, of course, in preparation for this record, and I just read it all in one go. I read all 100 page, not that the, you know, reading a 100 page comic is necessarily like, you know, that daunting intellectually, but I didn't, I just was like, oh yeah, this would just, and it just moves seamlessly from one story to the next. And I love the fact that they chose such a Hercules centric series of stories. You know, I mean, it, this is really half Thor, half Hercules. But man, I just, it's just really, it's a really, really fine treasure.
I can relate. I mean, I picked this up and I was looking forward to it, but I was always thinking 100 pages, that might be quite exhausting. But no, it isn't, because as we're working through the book, we're getting into the golden era of Lee and Kirby Thor. You've got wonderment at every page, the ornate cod Shakespearean dialogue in full flow, panels decorated randomly with massive sculptures, and there's fascinating folk everywhere. If Marvel were in the business of doing what DC is currently doing, of, you know, doing the occasional, reprinting the occasional Treasury edition in hardcover, you should get straight to this one.
Oh, absolutely. This would be I'll buy any Treasury DC or Marvel puts out in hardcover just to support it and to have a slightly more durable version. But man, this, I agree, Martin, this would be near the, you know, like a top of the list, of Treasury. Because first of all, the colors would look so good on the slightly nicer paper. Like, oh my God, it would just pop. It would be so beautiful. And again, it's just a really solid bunch of stories. So, I'm glad you picked this one. I really am, because it was such a, so fun to reread.
I was just delighted to be able to talk about it, because as I said, these Marvel Treasuries in particular were magical objects that I could never get. And now that we have eBay, I can grab them, and the prices seem to be a little bit cheaper over here. So to be able to read it and have a little chat about it, what a treat. Thank you so much, Rob.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you were able to get it for a good price. Over here, you go to a convention. I mean, everything's priced up at conventions, but like, you find Treasuries at a convention, they are through the roof. Even the kind of like off-brand Welcome Back Cotter or whatever. They are. So I'm glad you were able to find this copy relatively affordably. That's awesome.
I'm a lucky buddy.
Absolutely. Well, Martin, I'm so glad we finally got a chance to do Treasury Cast. This is your fourth appearance on one of my solo shows. So you're 4/5 of the way to a Robbie. It's very exciting for you, I'm sure.
It's
a dream. So thank you so much for doing this. Why don't you tell people where they can find you out on the internet?
Well, I've got a blog called Too Dangerous for a Girl, which you can find by Googling Too Dangerous for a Girl. I'm on the Twitter while it's there as @MarchGray. I'm on Facebook. You can find me in Musselburgh, Scotland. Just knock on the door. But I'm around the internet generally. Have a little look if you want to find me and just say hello. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, again, Martin, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. And thank all of you for listening. Stay tuned. I'm going to run some podcast promos. And when I come back, I'm going to do some listener feedback.
Are you tired of fanboy comics podcasts? Looking for a show that really appreciates the comic storytelling medium and how it works? A show that looks at comics from any genre and anywhere in the world, comparing the storytelling techniques of different creators in different comics cultures, with manga, newspaper strips, European comics, and more, discussed alongside mainstream U.S. comics. A show that includes talks with well-known creators like James Robinson and Dan Jurgens, and with less famous creators that you really should know. And hey, we'll even critique your comic. If you're looking for that show, then you're looking for Deconstructing Comics, and it's right here at deconstructingcomics.com. Also available in iTunes and on Stitcher. This is Tim saying, check out our show on Wednesdays. That's Deconstructing Comics.
Love him or hate him, everybody's got something to say about John Byrne.
He ruined the X-Men when he left.
That John Byrne, he's a sexist pig.
The only thing bigger than John Byrne's ego is... Oh, wait, there isn't anything bigger than John Byrne's ego.
John Byrne, oh, he just draws the greatest butt on Superman. It looks so good.
John Byrne is the greatest artist I've ever seen. Wait, who is he?
John Byrne's 1986 Man of Steel series gave us the core reimagining of Superman that is still with us today.
Third Degree Byrne, a podcast about all things John Byrne, the good, the bad, and the legendary. Join Tim Elliott and Brian Hughes as they look over the nearly five decades body of work of one of the most influential comic book creators in the last 50 years. Third Degree Byrne can be found at twotruefreaks.com and on iTunes.
I've got a question, though. I'm curious. Why doesn't Green Lantern have any junk?
And it's time for listener feedback, and these are the comments we got on TreasureCast episode number 82, where we talked about Spidey with my guest Dan Gavazdin. First up is Brian Schufo, who says, I'm glad I'm not the only one who has had a really hard time following Spider-Man lately. I look at the shelf of my local comic shop and see dozens, of Spider-related titles. At this point, I only pick up the alternate universe titles that aren't meant to fit into any continuity. There was one recently where a very young Spider-Man was trapped on an island with Uncle Ben, with a few other heroes from different time periods. I was confused, but it was an exciting confusion where I was invested in figuring out what was going on. Thanks for another fun episode and for including the Spidey Super Stories theme from the Electric Company. Such a retro banger of a song. It truly is, Brian. Rob McCarthy says, kids might not like puzzle pages, but that may not be the problem. I work in manga and was a galaxy and was a galaxy sized flop at writing puzzles. Everything's either too hard or too easy. Who's Peter Parker's aunt or what's Flash Thompson's real name? Also, coding a puzzle into the online version is madness. Never thought about that. Thanks for the details, Rob. Davis says, Spider-Man comics are in such a weird place nowadays. Marvel editorial is practically holding Peter hostage in a perpetual late 20s. Even giving that age feels reluctant. Curious to see if Miles will end up in a similar situation, considering he started at 13 in the comics and is now 17, 18 by now. They could keep him locked in an ambiguous age post-college if they keep going at this rate, but then they'll run into the same problem as with Peter's been going through. It's tough, frankly. I wonder if they'll bring him back to the Ultimate Universe and give him a bracelet to come back to 616, wherever the story calls for it. I do really like the mentor and apprentice dynamic with them, though. He'll never be my Spider-Man, but Miles is a fun character. I haven't read Spidey yet, but Nick Bradshaw's art is fantastic to me, and I can't believe he hasn't been put on an ongoing aside from Wolverine and the X-Men, unless he can't hold a regular schedule. It reminds me of Art Adams and Ryan Stegman. Bucky749 says, another great episode. Spider-Man is one of my favorites, as well as you. Peter Parker is the Spider-Man I know. I think Marvel needs to take a class on how to make legacy heroes. Ada Boznar says, a great show with an ironclad guest. If Dan knows anything about the etymology of his surname, he'll get the reference. This is definitely another one where I learned a whole bunch, and it's not only a book I never knew existed, but also reprinted stories from a series I never knew existed. Based on your discussion and the art samples on the gallery page, it looks like something I'll be interested in reading. To some extent, it seems a bit like the material in the Marvel Adventures line, which I really liked. Well, I liked the stuff reprinted in the Marvel Digest from a few years back. Also, Rob, I can relate to your complaint about the poor use of the extra page in the Treasury. My personal suggestion, instead of a puzzle or something, would be one of those mini Marvels by Chris Giarrusso. That's a great idea, Udo. I should have thought about that. I love Chris Giarrusso's work, and that would be perfectly in line with kind of the classic Treasuries and probably a little more practical than a puzzle. That's how old I am. And then in response to Ado's comment about Dan's name, Dan Gavazdin, or I should say Dapper Dan Gavazdin, chimed in. He says, Ado, great joke about my last name. You're the only person I've met that's ever noted that. I like to joke that I chose the wrong superhero to podcast about. Glad you dug my appearance here. Guys, please explain the joke. I didn't get it. I don't understand the etymology bit with Dan's name. So, Ado, please follow up and let us all in on what the joke is. Or maybe I'm the only one who doesn't get it. Martin Gray says, thanks to you, Rob, and other you, Dan, for a fantastic podcast. I do miss having a Spider-Man book I want to follow. I really enjoyed the Brand New Day era once I stopped harumphing about the loss of Peter and MJ's marriage, and the Superior era was pretty good too. I cannot believe Marvel has gone back to all that totem nonsense from the JMS era. For all I know, Peter is back spraying organic webs from his spider bum. All well, at least I've now been told about another podcast that sounds well worthwhile. Actually, tuning in, Dan. This Treasury sounds frustrating. Unfinished stories have no place in collections. I kind of wish they had just run all the Spideys. I understand wanting to get in some Miles in there too, but it did feel just weirdly incomplete. And then finally, Brett Young says, great show, Rob and Dan. I had no idea this Spidey treasury existed, but no diorama. What's this, Russia? When I ask my six-year-old son who his favorite superheroes are, some of the names change with whoever he's into at the time. Superman, Hulk, Thor, Batman, Black Panther. But one name that is always mentioned is Spider-Man. I think kids are drawn to him not only because of the cool powers, but the fact that he could be anyone behind the mask. It doesn't matter your sex, skin color, hair, etc. It could always be you swinging on a web across the city or climbing up a wall. I will definitely try and find a copy for my kid. I haven't read Spider-Man since the Ultimate series ended. I really like the Miles character, but like John Kent at DC, I feel like he needs his own superhero name. Otherwise, he's always second fiddle. And as far as aging up Peter Parker, no, he shouldn't be a kid anymore, but there are limits. If I want to see an always exhausted dad whose knees hurt, I can look in the mirror. By the way, please let us know when you have your old man shouting in a cloud moment and pick it outside of the Marvel offices. I can't wait to see you holding up a Spidey treasury and a sign that says, not my treasury, or give me Treasury Comics in or 10 by 13.5 inches or give me death. Marvel is still in New York. Maybe that might happen. Brett, you never know if I have free time. So that's going to do it. Thanks so much for the comments. I really appreciate it. Big thanks to my pal Martin Gray for coming by and talking about the mighty Thor. He's been a friend of the network since its inception, and I'm always happy to have him on one of my shows. So thanks so much for coming by, Martin. So that's going to do it for this episode of Treasure Cast. Of course, you can find all the back episodes on our website, finewaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on any podcatcher of your choice. We're on Twitter at Treasury Comics. And then finally, if you want to support the Finewater Podcast number, just go to patreon.com/FW podcast, and there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name-checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to Jeff Pullier, Brett Young, and Mark Balbus for their support of Treasure Cast. I really appreciate it. So that's going to do it. We'll see you next month. But until then, go big or go home.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heaven